we go.
So we are in the second class of our character development, and I asked the homework, what is the Hebrew word for character traits, qualities, personality traits? The Hebrew word is called?
Midot.
From the word measure. And I also asked then, what does the Rambam tell us about the best way of improving our midot? Now, many of you answered correctly. When I say correctly, I mean it doesn't necessarily answer the question I was looking for, but it was correct when many of you said that the Rambam is against extremes. He followed the Aristotelian golden mean, and we gave a couple of examples last week that we should always look for when any time we are developing our personalities and our characters. The goal is not to become a saint. The goal is not to become perfect. The goal is not to be on the extreme. The goal is to find something in between. So, for example, anger. What's the opposite of someone who gets angry all the time?
Happy.
Not happy. So passive. What did the Rambam describe that person as?
Dead.
He says like a kames, like someone who's dead, like nothing bothers them. So that's not a good thing either. The goal is not to be so in control of your angry that nothing upsets you. If nothing upsets you, how can you educate your children? How can you demonstrate to your friends when there is a value that has just been offended, if nothing seems to bother you? On the other hand, if everything, you fly off the handle, we're going to get back to this. So I give that as an example. But what I was really looking for is, what is the methodology that the Rambam, that Maimonides suggests? Yeah?
Repeat repetitive action.
Good. Repeat, repeat, and repeat. Repeat and repeat, I said. Now, this doesn't work for everything. But it's a little of a boot camp we talked about last week, where let's say a person's got a big ego. What should a person do if they've got a big ego from a behavioral Maimonides perspective? You could go to the therapist and lie down for a couple of months, maybe even years, and try to get to the bottom of what has made you an arrogant person. And by the way, sometimes that might be necessary. Sometimes psychoanalysis is a better approach than a more of a behavioral approach. Or you can just say, what? What can you do? What would be an example?
You could practice doing acts of gratitude.
Well, not gratitude. What would it be? Be very specific. What would you do? What kind of activities would you engage in order to, let's say, combat the ego?
Selfless acts.
Humility.
Humility. So what's an act of humility? You'd have to throw yourself. I mean, giving charity definitely would help.
Volunteering.
Combat. Volunteering, but something that's going to somehow make you, I don't want to say make you feel bad about yourself. No, but what?
Prayer.
What's that?
Prayer.
Prayer could, actually. I mean, all these things will help.
Acknowledging what's larger.
Because, right, when you pray, what are you saying? Somebody greater than you.
Right.
It might be doing an act of kindness for someone. Let's say you're a big CEO executive, and you might start volunteering and helping someone that doesn't have a lot of money and doing something for them. Not because you're trying to be a nice guy, but because you want to break your ego. In fact, when I was 18, I studied in yeshiva in Israel. Those of you who came to Israel with us this summer, we had a beautiful Friday night dinner on the Merpeset there on that beautiful balcony. You remember? And that was the yeshiva where I studied many years ago. And my Rebbe, you should live and be well, Rabbina, always used to say, and you're not going to like this story, but I was in yeshiva for like 2 weeks. I'm 18 years old. He calls me to his home. He puts a piece of paper and a pen next to me and he says, "You seem like one of the popular ones." I didn't really know this rabbi very well at the time. "I want you to write down on the paper who the other egos that came with you from New York." We were on a exchange program. There were about 40 of us. Like 30 from the United States and like 10 Anglos, British, South American, Australians. "Write down the big egos." I felt like there was like a light shining on me. Like, talk, who, like, I'm like, what? What is it? What do you mean? I'm like being interrogated. You want me to? So he says, "Listen." So I said, "Well, what are you going to do anyway? If I write down people I think are arrogant from my group." He said, "Listen, I can't teach people Torah who are arrogant. I have to first work on breaking their ego." That sounds a little harsh. "And once I break the ego, then I can teach them Torah." And then he had this one line that I've been repeating since I was 18. He says, "Because when you have a big ego, there's no room. It's just you. There's no room for God. There's no room for anything greater than you. And it's not just God, it's other people who might... you can't really learn if you think you've got it all. If you think you know it all, what does it say in the ethics of our fathers? Ezo HaChacham, who is a wise person? Halomed mikol adam, a person who learns from every person. If you don't believe you can learn from everyone, now that doesn't mean you can learn everything from everyone, but everyone has somebody to something to teach. And if you're too filled with yourself, then you can't grow. You're just going to stay the way you are because I've got everything I need. I'm exactly where I need to be. So that's an example of putting yourself in a situation where... I don't know if you can be a little more creative, if there's any other a person who has an ego. We can go through all the different traits. What I wanted to do with you tonight is speak a little about anger. Because I thought I would pick one example, and I also think it's something that many of us wrestle with. And I want to use it as a way of illustrating a Torah approach to overcoming our inclinations. Because I think we live in a world that fights the whole premise of change. I have seen in my own lifetime how the notion that that who I am is the way God made me. And I'm going to maybe come back to this a little later if we have a little time. We'll talk about free will. But I want to get a little more into anger, first of all. Because many of us, I think, believe or have been taught, and there is literature that seems to back this up, I think some of it's been manipulated, that we can't really control. We're not really in control of certain things. Now, you know what? Let me just jump into it right now. And then I'll deal with anger. Right, we have time. Maimonides, the same Rambam, wrote something very, very powerful. He said that everyone is given free will. Now you'll figure, what's a big deal? That's an easy one. I believe in free will. I can choose. Nobody's putting a gun to my head. The Rambam was dealing with a group of people called the predeterminists. He lived in the 1100s, 1200s in Spain, later in Egypt. And there was a very active group of intellectuals that believed, or that denied the belief in free will. And they said that everything you are and who you are has been predetermined, and there's nothing you can do to break out of it. Anybody know who believes in that today? Does anyone believe in that today, that like you're just sort of playing a part in life and you can't really exercise free will? So you could look at extreme astrologists this way. What's an extreme astrologer? You know, look up your horoscope, and the horoscope says, I'm a Leo, and therefore, since I'm a Leo, my tendencies are A, B, and C, and therefore I'm going to approach these situations in the following way. And you can bang your head against the wall, you can get all the therapy you want, but I'm sorry, you're a Leo. That's just the way the world is aligned, the constellations, the this and that. The Rambam took great issue with this. Even though, by the way, there were great rabbis, and there are still today who are astrologists, but who don't believe in this aspect of astrology. Okay?
Astrology is banned. Again, it's not that it's in the commandments.
Not necessarily. Black magic and other forms of sorcery are prohibited in the Torah, but the Ramban, Nachmanides, considered himself an astrologist, but didn't subscribe to this particular aspect of astrology. Astrology is a little of a broader area. They did believe that the world was created in a certain way, and we are affected by the physical world, but it doesn't mean we are determined by it. Okay? And the Rambam says, and he's very opinionated, he says, don't allow yourself to think like many of the fools of the world, and even many Jews among them, he says, that God decrees upon every human being from the very beginning of his creation that this person will be a tzaddik. What's a tzaddik? A righteous person. And this person will be a rasha, an evil person. He says, no such doing. In fact, he says, any person can be as great as Moses or as evil as Yeravam. Moses, everyone here knows, who was Yeravam? Yeravam was in the book of the prophets. He was a terrible tyrant that oppressed the Jewish people and ultimately brought them into idol worship. And the Rambam says that every human being can be as great as Moses. And don't think because you're this and you're not that. And he goes on to say that God never decreed on any human being whether they would be this or that, whether a person would be merciful or cruel, foolish or smart. strong or weak. These are all... Now, well, he doesn't say strong or weak, actually. I'm going to get to this in a minute. Now, the Talmud seems to contradict this. Because the Talmud tells us that there's this angel called Layla. There are many angels, by the way. Don't ask me if I understand the whole world of angels, but it's actually quite a sophisticated world of Jewish mysticism, and it involves angels, and we do believe in them. They're not physical beings, and you can't see them, but they are spiritual forces. They're not people, and they're not God. And there's this one angel called Layla, which means night, and I'm going to read you the Talmud. And the Talmud says that this one angel who is appointed over pregnancy, different angels have different jobs, and comes before God with a tipah. A tipah is a drop. Rashi, the commentator, says it's referring to a drop of sperm. And this angel comes with a drop of sperm and stands before God, v'omer, and says, l'fanav ribono shel olam, O God of the universe, tipah zu, this drop, matehe aleh, what will become of it? Gibor o chalash, strong or weak. Chacham o tipesh, smart or foolish. Ashir, rich, or ani, or poor. V'ilu rasha utzadik lo ka'amar. Well, stop. I should have stopped. If I stop right there before those last Hebrew words, what would you say you could derive from this passage in the Talmud? This angel comes with a drop of sperm. It hasn't even fertilized the egg. It's not even anywhere near a person yet. And God says, and the angel asks God, like, what's going to happen with this thing that's eventually going to be a person? Strong or weak? Foolish or wise? Rich or poor?
So you're half predetermined?
It seems like you're predetermined.
You're genetically only half. It's just the sperm. That egg probably has to have all the free will.
Oh, I never thought of that. Okay, only a scientist would say that. Okay, so that's an interesting suggestion, Josh. We'll leave the free will for the egg. The women bring the free will. The guys are a bunch of, you know, like, this is the way I am.
Just tell me what to do.
You just
tell
me.
This is a good, this actually be a good line for like a comedian, you know? There's this passage in the Talmud, you know, like,
I never heard that. I've been teaching this for many years. I've never heard that approach. It seems as though it contradicts. Let's just assume, well, you can't assume. The Talmud says it's just a drop, and it's not referring to the egg, it's referring to the sperm, at least according to Rashi. But the last part of the, it's really not a contradiction. It seems like a contradiction because it seems like whether this person's rich or poor, strong or weak, smart or foolish, has already been predetermined. But the Talmud ends by saying, V'ilu tzadik o rasha lo ka'amar. The angel never asks God whether this person will one day become a tzaddik, a righteous person, or a rasha, God forbid the opposite, a wicked person. And then he quotes from Rabbi Chanina, a great Talmudic sage, who said, Hakol bidei shamayim, you want to sound really fancy, learn this phrase, Hakol bidei shamayim, everything is bidei shamayim, everything is in heaven, in the hands of heaven, yadayim are hands, chutz mirat shamayim, except for the fear of heaven. Everything is in God's hands except for the fear of God. What does that mean? Talmud is telling us something very powerful. The angel asks all of these things that might actually